Well, I guess we'll just keep trucking along and questions will come out. I want to finish this and then once we get into small church mentality, I think it'll unearth underlying attitudes that I find are prevalent in the church, and that'll give rise to maybe some more of your questions, which is really important. So, let's just keep moving right where we're going here. Maybe we can get rid of some of the squiggle. Okay, so, we're moving into the choleric style. Okay, Terry asked a very insightful question over lunch. He said, okay, we've got to go to the choleric style, but what hope does a phlegmatic have? You know, he's putting forward a, what kind of question would you call it? It wasn't rhetorical, it was very provocative. It was a good question, very insightful, that's the word. The answer to that is no, that's not the point. But a phlegmatic can learn choleric styles and still be true to themselves. Which brings us to this screen. What does it mean by a choleric style? It means I go to the zone of strategic, decisive, practical, productive, self-confident. They are the traits of leadership. I haven't got time to go into it all, but strategic. What does it mean to move from a doing ministry mindset practice to a strategic mindset? And I'm a phlegmatic. What does that mean? Okay. To live in this zone means to be spontaneous, non-lineal, low organized, because you don't need to, do you? You know what I mean? I know who the members of my church are. I can get out, and as their needs arise, I visit them, and I just work through a list, and hey, we're home and hosed, right? 2,500 members. Backdoor's as huge as a whatever, right? You've got to narrow it. So you've got to become strategic. So strategic in my pastoral work means I begin to write down a bit of a plan on how we're going to meet people, and we come up with a bit of an organisational chart, and we have, you know, these people here, they're going to look after these people, right? And then we're going to have a full chart. And so we get a bit of strategy happening, okay? And so we begin to think, okay, I've now got 100 people, divided by 40 weeks in the year, because 10 weeks off with holidays and stuff. 3. Okay, so a strategy says I need to visit 3 people a week. Then the question is, who are those people? I need to visit a leader a week, and I'm going to visit 2. See, that's strategic thinking. Okay, and if you don't go there, what you do is just responding. You're sporadic. And then what you find is some of the people that really do need a visit don't get it. Especially as it gets bigger. So you see how the shift happens? So, and you don't have to be choleric, clipboard, totally organized, you know, bang, bang, bang kind of person. You're just a ministry that's now starting to think, wait a minute, I can no longer just respond to needs and be laissez-faire, kind of loose in what I do. I need to get a sense of strategy and a bit of organization. If I can't do it myself, find someone to help you. Get an overseer, or there's a businessman in your church that's has some idea of this and can get them to brainstorm and help you. And then you find you begin to move through. So we move through into this level and there's a shift that's happening. Now 12.6% of all churches are in this quadrant. Or 97.6, I quoted a wrong figure before, it's even higher. 97.6% of churches are less than 500. So what's happening is as we go, if we have a number of church size, it goes this way. So as you increase size of church, the numbers of churches, their numbers, actually decrease as you increase through But it actually probably, it's more probably like that, actually. That's actually the graph. It's an inverted, goes like that. So under 200, you've got 85% of churches. Yeah, no, it's more. It's probably more. It's more like that. But anyway, we won't go there. I'm not a mathematician. So in other words, the shift is from a ministry approach to a management approach, where you begin to actually manage the various ministries and small groups in your church. Someone asked me before, I think it was over lunch, they said, yeah, but what if you just can't go there and you know you've got to go there, but it's just not you? Then staff your weaknesses. So people say, man, you've got a big staff. You know, we've got over 30 staff just in our church. So how come you need all those people? Well, I need to cover a lot of my faults and lacks, you see. You just staff your weaknesses, okay? Right? So I don't need another preacher in the pulpit, although we do, we have a whole lot, in the sense. I don't need another leader preacher like me up there every week casting the vision. I'm doing that pretty well. But I do need a whole lot of managers. I need a whole lot of establishers and, promoters of the vision. I need a whole lot of primary group pastoral leaders. So I need all of those people happening in the church to make it happen. So I'm focusing on all these things like strategic, decisive, productive, practical, confrontation, and talking about problems in the church. Because what I find in leadership is if we don't confront the problems, they do not go away. They just fester. And they bring out more problems later. And I would say that most of us in this room, myself included, do not like confrontation. Like, I'll stand up for myself. And if it's personal, you know, I'm in. But most of the time, honestly, it's not about that. It's about misunderstandings. It's about not happy about this or that. And if we don't handle it, it doesn't go away. As a matter of fact, it gets worse. And eventually attitudes build. And I think a lot of people leave churches simply because they've just had enough. They just can't cope anymore. And they just go, I'm out of here. It's just emotionally too draining. People want to go to church and actually enjoy it. Actually, that's why people want to feel good. They don't want to sit in church going, oh, brother. You know, you don't want that vibe. So this one's a big one here. And that's why I said it is a very difficult zone to cross and actually manage. Here are my reasons for Australia for crossing or not crossing this area. The first one is most of the Australian population are phlegmatic, sanguine personalities. We covered that before. We've got a thing in our culture called sticking by your mates. It's even in their song, stand by your mates, in True Blue, right? What that means is we will even be prepared to go against authority and structures and laws to stand by your mates. It's deeply rooted into the culture because Australia was founded as a prisoner colony. New Zealand wasn't. New Zealanders don't quite have that. We have our mates and everything, but if a mate's wrong, we're prepared to tell them. Australians will tend to stick by their mates. It's a huge thing. So what we find in our churches is once the pastor tries to hold people accountable, they go, wait a minute, aren't we mates? Well, we are, but you're still going to do what I say because I'm the leader. Wait a minute, leader, mate, how do I cope with this? And then cope. Well, you have to cope. You know. So Anthony Josephs, he's a mate of mine. He was in New Zealand with us. Fraser will know him well. We played rugby together. And when he played for Fielding, we had a scrap or two, but that's all right. We got over that. Brother had to get used to losing, didn't he, brother? And he's been with us. He's a really neat guy. He's a Maori mate of mine, and he's come over. He's one of my 2IC pastors. He's one of my mates, you know. But he spoke the other week to our pastors about how to be a 2IC, and it was just incredible. I sat there. And one of the light bulb experiences he's had is this. He said, I've had to learn when to be Gordon's mate and when to be his follower. And he said, it's like a cap. And he said, I've got to go, nah, it's not mate here. He's the boss. And he said, that hasn't been easy. But he said, I've had to learn it. And he said, I realise that if I get it confused, Gordon's going to get that look on his face. And it's going to be over. You know, because at the end of the day, I want to keep him as my mate, really. Because we've known each other for 30 years, right? But at the end of the day, if he's not prepared to follow me and really let me lead, and then when I do, he goes, oh, mate, we're mates, aren't we? Calm down, mate. You're getting all stressed, you know. It's not important. No, it is important. You know, we've got to go there. And so this takes a gift, you know, an understanding to really go there. We've got another thing happening in our culture, and it's not here at all. And it's called, she'll be right, mate. Near enough is good enough. See, in the Australian song that they sing when they try to take on the All Blacks is True Blue. Have you heard that song? One line says this. You stick it together with wire to get the job done. So the idea is that's an outback idea that, you know, you're on your own, you've broken down your car and the axle's going to fall off. You get a bit of wire and you fix it with a bit of wire just to get the job done, you see. And that's a positive trait. The negative is we're going to paint the church and we need $5,000. What are we painting the church for? We're going to replace the carpet. The carpet's been good round here for 10 years. Why do we need to replace it now? It's got holes in it. Well, what's your problem? She'll be right, mate. Gordon, loosen up. You're getting uptight. You're sitting in your office fretting. There's nothing wrong with this building. Yes, there is. You know? So you get that kind of downside to it happening. You know? You know, we've had people come into our church and, you know, they just get really unwired a bit with it because they think, oh, it looks too good and, you know, the seats are too comfortable and, you know, who's paid for this and why isn't it going to the poor? And, you know, and then you get into all this thing. And so that's a deep cultural attitude that's got to be talked about. Otherwise, if it isn't, you can't talk about money. You can't build the church you need to build. You're always... So this zone here is beginning to confront that and talk about it. And it's a really important place to go to. What else? We have another thing happening right across the body of Christ, that small is better. That big churches are impersonal. That once you get the church big, it won't be like the old days. You know, Gordon's a big shot now, you can't see him. You know, I had a guy that used to call in, really good guy, business guy, and he'd call in, hey Gordo, how you going, mate? I said, doing great. Coffee? Let's go, mate. So away we go and have coffee. That's when we had about 50 people. I remember distinctly when we moved building and I hired a secretary and we're running a couple of hundred. And he calls up to the church. Hey, where's Gordo? Oh, that's Pastor Gordon. Oh, Pastor Gordon now. Well, he's Gordo to me. Listen here. Don't talk about our pastor like that. It's Pastor Gordon. Show him respect. Oh, this place is getting... Well, where is he? Where's Pastor Gordon? Well, he's not here. What does he do all day? You know, kind of attitude, you know. Well, where is he? He's got an important meeting he's gone to with the bank, whatever, you know. Oh, well, I'll hang around here. Oh, no, that's no good. He's got other appointments. What are you saying? Well, if you want to see Pastor Gordon, you need an appointment. I need an appointment now to see the pastor? I pay tithes, you know. And all this stuff starts to come out, you know. It's gone quiet in here. Yeah, we are. Because he started to learn that it wasn't personal, it was bigger. But the point I'm making is there's a culture that doesn't want our churches to get bigger. So it's manageable, and I can just roll up and get Gordon's attention anytime I want. You know? So it's kind of a zone of a cultural mindset rather than it's not true. Small is not better. But here's another thought. Big isn't necessarily better either. We're not talking about numbers here. We're talking about a quality of church. Right? So I've been into large churches that are dead. They're decreasing, but they're large. And I've been into small churches that are vibrant, meeting the needs of their community, and just doing an awesome job. The second thing, the DIY culture. Did I talk about this before? Okay. The do-it-yourself culture is huge in Australia. You know, the biggest thing right now in Australia is Bunnings. They're bigger than churches. There's one right opposite our church. It's huge, acres under this thing. And it's like male heaven. America have them, they call ProBass. Anyone been to a ProBass shop? When I go to America, just go to one. And it's just everything a man would want. Fishing, hunting, tents. They even have, I went into one and they had a whole corner with boats. It's like a supermarket. And it's all inside, air conditioned. And while you're there, you can have a coffee and eat too. And it's all fat food. You don't have to, there's no such thing as this health stuff. It's un-PC. It's just male heaven. And you just eat your dog and drink, and then you go around and you have a look at fishing gear. But you know what? That culture actually can set this idea of do it yourself. Okay? So, Australians do everything themselves. If they can build it, make it, get it themselves, they do it. Right? So, that's in the church. Even Anthony, my assistant pastor, even though he's a Kiwi, he's got the spirit on him. And what he did one day is he went and got this drill and it didn't work. So instead of taking it back, I can fix it. So he fixed it, you know, yellow one, red one. Oh, yeah, that was it. And he fell off the ladder and nearly killed himself, you know. What am I saying? What I'm saying is you can get a thing in the church that, because we think, oh, the church is different, but the church is often a reflection of our culture. And so we get this thing that we can do it myself. I don't need anyone to tell me. And what I've found is, through quite a few years of mentoring and training pastors, I've found that the pastors that are growing and building viable, healthy churches are listening and taking advice. And I find the churches that are always having the trouble, the pastor won't listen. He won't listen to his wife, he won't listen to his board, he won't listen to his overseer, and wonder why he's got trouble. And, you know, I was mentioning in the first session, you know, it's I'll pray about it. And that really gets Gordon Moore stirred up when a guy says, I'll pray about it, Pastor. Because, you know, I know what he's really saying. I've been around long enough, you know, and so you talk about it. The third thing that happens is I think, and this is a word that I created myself, is we have an expertism culture. Because everyone hears from God and they know what they're talking about. And I'm just sick and tired of people coming into my church and telling us what to do when they have done nothing. Yeah. And they come, I can see them coming straight for me. I'm trying to get out of the retractor beam. Now they've got me. Yeah, hi, how are you going? Need to talk to you. I had a guy come up to me recently. He came right up to me, man. After the meeting, not a good time. I've just preached. I'm sweating a bit and I'm probably upset that I didn't preach as good as I could have, you know, but anyway. And this guy comes straight for me and says, I want to talk to you. I went, oh, this is going to go pear-shaped. And he says, you know what you were saying? I said, don't do that. And he went to poke me again, and I grabbed his finger and went, woof! And he goes down on the ground, you know? And I held him there. Then I thought, where do I go? Because I've got to hit him. Because I've come this far, right? I'm out on a limb here. And then I felt these eyes burning into my head. And I looked around and here's a 17-year-old kid watching their pastor, their hero, take you out. Because I got angry and it was wrong, you know. But I thought, I can't do this. So I just backed off and said, look, sorry. And he was so afraid he left. He never came back. But I thought, no, that's not good. So then I had to then talk to some of my key guys to say, you need to be minding me. So Anthony now, he's awesome, eh? The moment a guy comes in, recently a guy came for me, and Anthony's there. Anthony, like it's, you know, the crash tackle in the Lord. He's coming down. Anthony, how you going, mate? How you going? He stood right, because he's a big Maori boy, you know. He's standing right here. The guy comes and says, oh, I want to see the pastor. I know Gordon's. Just leave him, mate. Just preach, mate. Give him a break, you know. He needs some water. And then that's my, I'm out of here, son. I'm moving, mate. You know, and then he handled it. You know, and so we had to handle that. But you see, that guy, he was going to correct me. About a year ago, I had a guy come up after a meeting, the visitor. He said, I said, oh, how are you going? He said, oh, okay. He said, I didn't like this. He said, you know, your music. I said, excuse me? He said, no, I want to say something about your music. I said, no, I didn't ask you. What's more, I don't care what you say. You're a visitor. I said, can I say something to you, sir? I said, you would be one of the rudest Christians I've ever met. You're coming into this home, this house. You don't even come here. It's your first time. And you're going to tell us what to do? I said, have you pioneered a church, built a church? Have you been a pastor of anything? Oh, no. I said, well, look, when you do, and you have, ring me and we'll have a coffee. Until there, I ain't interested in your opinion. Because, you see, these people think they're going to tell us what to do, when to do, and they did nothing. It's like taking my car, I want to get it fixed, and I take it to mates down the pub or wherever. So how do I fix it? You know, oh, here's a spanner, you know, here's a screwdriver, you know. Now, where do you take it? You take it to a mechanic. And he's got a certificate on the wall. He's been in business a few years. He'll fix it, right? I've got a heart attack happening. Quick, take me to Bob the mechanic. No, I want to go to the hospital, to the heart ward. But in the church, we're all talking to people that didn't build anything or do anything. And then we wonder why we get this culture that's not working. Because we're talking to the wrong people. Now, I'm talking to pastors here. Who are you talking to, right? But you see, in our church, we talk about this too, to our members of our church. We say, if you've got a financial problem, who do you talk to? Someone who's succeeded financially, maybe? You want to talk to someone about your marriage? Who do you talk to? Someone that's got a good marriage, maybe? You want to talk about your kids? Who do you talk to? To parents that actually have raised a pretty good family? That's probably a good place to start. What I find happens in the Christian world, I talk to all these rebels and renegades. I know I'm preaching to the choir here. But man, we've got to get rid of this. But it starts with us. So if I've got a problem, I need to go to an overseer. I need to go to someone that's actually beyond where I'm at. Rather than just talking to people that have experience. And I've got the difference here between experience and expertise. Experience is I've seen it happen. Expertise is I've made it happen repeatedly. Now here's another one that's maybe a bit more theological and maybe overarching. An observation I think is that a lot of churches are pastored and planted and led pastorally and evangelistically rather than apostolically. So what we've done in our movement, we've simply located the apostles, if you like, or the apostolic ministries. We don't call them that. We're not apostolics, you know, but we know who they are. We're just not saying it. And what we do is we identify the apostolic leaders in the churches that are apostolic, and then we get all the other churches to submit to them. That's how. But it's not rocket science, but that's how we do it, you know. And so this levels thing now has become the whole way we run our churches. So the 75 submit to the 200 pluses, and the 200 pluses submit to the 400, 500s, and the 500 submit to the thousands. And that's how we do it. Because otherwise, if I've got 2,500, what's this pastor here telling me how to run it? He has no idea. No idea on God's earth. And so that's a really important thing to talk about. And so what I've tried to do is really think honestly and seriously about some of these things. What stops us from breaking through? I reckon sometimes we've got these cultural ideas, religious belief ideas that are actually stopping us. And we can't move forward because we're sort of trying to pull through the mud of all this stuff. I think before we bring systems or structures into place, we need to start talking about these among our leaders and among the pastors and talking about this. I can't do it on my own. I'm not an expert. I need help. I'm humble, which is actually a Christian idea. The fourth quadrant, melancholy. Okay. Here we go. Look at this. 1.9? percent. No, that can't be right. I reckon my figures are wrong there. Yeah. Sorry, what was it? Yeah. Is it 2.4? Did the sums wrong? So you see how it's going from 51, 34, 12, 2.4. Churches over 2,000, I happen to know the stat, are 0.01%, I think it is. So by the time you get down the graph here, it's getting really small. I've got a vision to do something like this, just get it a bit more gentle, so we've got more apostolic style churches. Yeah. I think it includes Asia. I think it includes, you know, Singapore. It won't be countries that don't take stats and things. But what I said is it doesn't matter what culture you go to, you'll find most churches fit into one of these four. That's the amazing light bulb thing that I got. So what happens to these churches? These churches have a leadership approach that's visionary, analytical, intuitive, holistic, reflective. In other words, it's looking at the whole picture and blending all the parts together. And churches that break through the 500, but the leadership can't blend all the parts, there's disaster waiting to happen. So constantly, I'm talking, for example, to the young people in the church, because the average age of our church is 20. We've got one of the youngest churches in the country, right? So average age 20, educated, upward mobile, right? Opinions. So I've got to constantly talk to the young people in the church and say, church is not a rock concert. Because, you know, young people go, oh man, the music, you know, needs to be up a bit, you know, and this is boring, and, you know, they should have smoke coming on the stage, and Gordon should come down and a you know, something on the back will go, you know, so give me a break, you know. So I say that to them. But then I'm going to the old people and saying, listen, we've got to get withered as older people. Now, of course, I'm over 55, I'm qualified. So I can really talk to the old people now. And we're getting more and more older people coming into our church. It's actually one of our growth areas. We've started up a 55-plus service called Gold Class. Because I'm in it. So it's going to be the best, you know. We're going for it, man. We're the old rockers. So, but you see, what I'm saying to them is, look, you can't turn our church into a geriatric unit. There are young people here too. See what I'm saying? Young people want to make it all high energy and, you know, the older people want sunset on the screen, sunsets and calming music. You know? So what does a holistic leader do? He brings both those together. And he says, a holistic leader is saying both are important. And then that's a whole skill set to convince, because there's a trend happening right now in Australia and New Zealand, the Western world, where young people only want youth church and old people only want old church, but I put forward the proposition that none of them are the church. Right. Together they're the church. Okay? It shall come to pass in the last days I'll pour my spirit on all flesh. Young men shall see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. What? Individually? No, together. So we need the dream, but we need the vision. See, so you've got to have dreams and vision. No, it could just have to be all vision. We're going to do this, we're going to go here, we're going to do that. We need a dream too. What do we dream of the church? What do we see in the big? You know, so we need those together. That there's an example. Okay? So it's making a community, building a community rather than let it splintering. And this sounds all great and we're building, we're coming here and we've got the cholerics, everything's happening, and then we're going to 1,000, but there's no harmony. There's no sense of holistic. There's no sense of wholeness with everybody. Then what happens is the thing can just be this clinical, kind of highly organized thing that's just trucking, but the old people have nothing to do with the young people and, you know, whatever. Right? Yes, sir.
You were saying we go for the homogeneous church.
Yes.
Half an hour ago.
Yes.
And now you're talking about multi.
No, that's age group. It's age group, but they're basically the same homogenous group. Okay, you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So our church is made up of, for instance, I'm thinking right now I've got a 55-year-old. He's a professor in ecological recycling, basically. Right? I've got a young 18-year-old, 22-year-old who's just graduated with honours, and he's got an engineering degree in mining and whatever, and a large mining company has just picked him up. He's earning filthy money. But you see what I'm trying to say? So I've got this young, switched-on 22-year-old, highly paid, and I've got this 55-year-old, switched-on, highly paid, right? My job as a holistic leader is to see that both together we can achieve something for God. And I know what it's like as an old person. I sometimes go into the youth meeting. They ask me, Pastor Gordon, you've got to come and preach, man. I go, yeah, and I've got to psych up for it. And I go in there, and honestly, I'm choking with the smoke. My eyes are running, and my heart's going like this, you know. And it's like, I just want some jazz, man. Can I go somewhere and sit and have a drink, have a jazz, you know, just so I hear the word, you know. But I've got to go there, because they are just as important as the older people. And then I go into the plus 55 group, and we do unplugged. So it's all the same music, all the same preaching, everything's the same, but it's in a different style for that age group. And we get young people to come in and do the music for them. Some of the old people are playing too, we get young people too. So it's not just all old people, and I want the young people to appreciate this.
Yeah.
And so this is really important. I don't think enough churches think about this, but you ought to be doing it from sowing all these seeds right from the beginning, because the day will come, if God grants you growth, that pulling it together is like most of your job. So I find most of my job is like a fatherly, statesman kind of person that's just, you know, convincing the old people or the older people that the youth are awesome, man. You know? So we got this about a year ago. The youth tell you what they're doing. Mate, we're doing this and we're doing that, man. And so we bring out a form and go, fill out this form. Sure, Pastor, no worries. Bam, we've got all the stats. How great is our youth ministry? Older people are more, well, you know, whatever. You know. So then a complaint came later, which was perfect for me. You wouldn't believe it, Nick. I heard this rumour coming back that some of the old people were saying, how come the young people are always getting mentioned in the meetings? Because they've got a PR department. That's how our young people think. They're aggressive, man. They're into it, man. Right? So I got the pastors in, the adult pastors, and I said, I hear this room. Have you heard it? Yeah, you know, it's fair. You know how the young people are always up front. You're always giving out messages about how well they're doing. And I said, well, that's because they give it to me. When was the last time that the adult department came and said to me, we had an awesome event last week and 10 people were converted? Or the women's department ran the special event and had 100 unchurched people at it. And I said, I never get it. I said, mind you, are they keeping their stats? So I could do a bit of a check-up and find out. And I used it as a learning thing. And the older people realised, wait a minute. We ought to get more active than what we're doing in the church. We need to be promoting what we're doing to the church, because there's old people sitting there that are only hearing young people's stuff. If they hear young, older people's stuff, away they go. Right? So you see, homogenous, not homogenous, holistic, it's blending, right? Okay? So here's another one. Very simple. I don't know why I'm throwing these out. We'll throw them out for free. Who's on your stage? What you promote and present on your stage is what you will attract into your church. So if you put weird, you'll get weird. So if you get a person that will give a test meal, the Lord just come in my life, and the Lord just this, and oh, my God said, and all that. Thinking people are going to go, do I want to be here? But if you get a business person up, or a Mr. Average in your church, or Mrs. Average to stand up and say, man, I wasn't into all of this thing, but I'll tell you, the other week the Holy Spirit came on me, and I found myself speaking another language. I used to think it was weird, but thinking people go, that's what I reckon I could, that could be for me. See? So you need a whole variety of people telling their story and performing and teaching and whatever. And I'm just talking about the Sunday service here. This applies everywhere. Right? So what's the average age of your church? Well, mine's 20. So that means the average age of the person up on the stage is going to be 20. Number one. Number two, that means at this end I need a 55, 60-year-old I need a solo mum. I need a 16-year-old. I need a 22-year-old. I need a 30-year-old. I need another 18-year-old. You see what I'm trying to say? I don't want to come into church and just see the older people performing. The young people won't relate. Now, another thing that's happening in our church too, we're attracting a lot of professional migrants who are moving into the area. We're getting quite a few Indian people coming, doctors, lawyers, accountants, right? And it's really interesting that one of their boys has come up as a keyboardist, really good musician, and he's getting up on stage, and he's about 18. But it's interesting to note, I've noticed it, since he's been up there, and I don't think it's just coincidental, the number of Indian families coming into our church is increasing. Because they walk in and they go, oh, there's some Indian people. Wow, there's a young Indian guy. My kids could be in this. See? Oh, I think we'll stay. But if they come in and they look around, and that's what it's like. But that's how people think. We think people go, God told me to come. God told me to stay. Most people don't think like that. Most people think, can I fit in here? Can my children get something happening in their life here? Will this church help my kids? Right? So it's really important that we think all of us through, and that's that holistic thing. Let's summarize this in another way, and we'll just bring this up to a conclusion. If you draw another circle, okay, with the four quadrants, just like that, but we make it simple, I want you to show now an overview. On this side, we've got ministry. On this side, we've got leadership. Okay? But let us define that even further. Over here, we've got people-orientated ministry. On this side, we've got vision orientated leadership. Orientated leadership. So what are we talking about? Ministry builds the believer. Leadership builds the church. Or the youth group, or the women's department, or the music department. Here's my light bulb experience. Ministry does not build the church. It builds individuals, it builds people's lives. Valid ministry must happen, because we all need building, don't we? But it doesn't build the church. Leadership builds the church. To build a church and grow a church, we need leadership. The choleric melancholy styles: strategic, accountability, holistic, intuitive, pulling all the parts together, taking it somewhere. Okay? So this is looking, when we mean by builds the believer, ministry wants to put something into a person. Leadership wants to take that person somewhere. It's a totally different mindset. Okay? Here's the other thing we've found. As the pastor of the church, or the youth group leader, or the woman's partner, pastor, focuses just on building the believer, they are unable to build the church and take the church somewhere. There's got to be a shift. So let me summarize it and put it into you in a practical way. Preaching doesn't grow the church. Prophecy doesn't grow the church. Healing doesn't grow the church. Prayer doesn't grow the church. The anointing doesn't grow the church. Visitation doesn't grow the church. Giving doesn't grow the church. Leadership grows the church. Leadership takes the giving, the preaching, the praying, the visitation. Leadership takes all those things and moves it somewhere. Right? Whereas ministry is busy about doing all those things. And if you as a pastor or leader or department head in your church are just doing all the ministry, visiting, preaching, counseling, praying for the sick, waiting on God, while you're doing that, you can't take it somewhere. So what I've found is the more I lead, the less ministry I do. The more I lead, the more ministry you do, if you're the members of the church. You see what it's saying? But how can I get you to visit? Say Jade's my assistant youth group leader, and I'm the youth pastor, and I'm visiting everyone and ringing them. And then, oh, you do it too. So Jade starts ringing all the guys, and I'm ringing all the guys, okay? So together we're both ministering. See, there's no strategy. What I've got to do is step back and say, Jay, I want you to visit and pastor all the youth, and I'm going to pastor the youth leaders, including yourself. And any difficult situations that arise over marriage or addictions or problems or whatever, you come to me and I'll get involved with you. That's called the Jethro model. Captains of tens, captains of fifties, captains of hundreds, captains of thousands. It is biblical. But you see, there's a shift that's got to happen from here to there, building the church. So let's summarize it in a different way. Let's move away from the quadrant picture and make it up as a sheet. On the left-hand side, we've got leadership. On the right-hand, we've got ministry. So we've got building people, pastoring and ministering. We've got building churches, leading and presiding. So what are we doing when we're ministering? We're preaching, teaching, administrating, counselling, serving, singing, visiting, whatever. What are we doing when we're leading? We're developing and inculcating purpose, values, culture, direction. We're taking it somewhere. Accountability, team meeting. Right, let's take music department. Okay. Let's pick on Jay because he's in the front row and he's good looking, so we can do that. Okay. He's the worship leader. What does he do? Lead the worship and stuff. Bring the presence of God. Write songs. Lead the band. Good. All right. That's all ministry. Here's the leadership question. Why are you doing it? And even more important, where are you going when you are leading it? Now, there's some good questions, right? So when Jade gets up to lead the worship on a Sunday, he's part of a leadership structure that has purpose, values, culture, direction in it. So let's take culture. What songs does he sing? What he feels the Lord's calling him to sing? No. He leads a set of songs that are already predetermined by leadership that will build the culture that we're wanting to pursue and the purpose. Okay, here's a value that, of ours in our church. One of the values, one of the five core values in our church, is the success and prosperity of every member of the church. That's what we're after. We want them to be successful in marriage, work, ministry, everything, okay? So, what songs do we sing? You are a worm, O Jacob, and we're here to grind you to powder. And just when you ground to powder, we'll kick you in the head as well. Negative, 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 pull them down, don't be successful. I'm exaggerating, okay. So what songs do we sing in our church? You're successful, God's great, He can do anything, you can be what God's called you to be. Again, it's not rocket science. So we actually predetermine all the songs that are sung, and song leaders, Jade is not allowed to choose a song off that list. He can sing any song he wants as long as it's on that list. Now, I get song leaders. Why do we have to do the songs on the list? I need to pray and be led by the Spirit. No, no, you're not led by the Spirit, you're led by me. Holy Spirit's leading me to lead you. And then I had one song leader one day to say, yeah, but you're controlling. I said, yep, exactly. Because I used to go, no, I'm not really, I'm a nice guy, like me. I've come to the place, yeah, I am controlling. And this is what I said to him, because if I don't control it, you will. See, leadership is about who's controlling it. Ministry is about who's doing it. It's a doing focus. Leadership is about direction, culture. Is the music that Jay is playing and singing and leading the church in building the purpose, value, culture, direction of the church? That's how specific it gets. Right? So we work on that. So that's just one area. Now you can reproduce that in the Sunday school, the youth, the women's, right? And leadership is the journey of Jay not just playing music and feeling good, but for a purpose. And his purpose has got to be the same as the youth leader, and the youth leader is the same as the woman's pastor, and listen to this, the same as me. Even I've got to submit to that. You see what I'm trying to say? I can't say that to my team and then act differently in the pulpit. Once we agree on that, once that's agreed on, that's what we do. And we go down that road, right? So what has that given rise to in our church? Out of every 12 songs that are done in our church, 8 or 9 would be written within the church. My daughter would be one of the best at it. She'll hear us preaching on a theme. She'll write a song on it. So it's hot. So right when we're preaching on it, in comes a song. So on our last building fund, 2 years ago, she wrote the song called In God's House. It's just awesome. It's on the latest CD. She wrote that on the theme of I Love My Church. So she wrote the song In God's House. See now, so now the songwriting is becoming part of the purpose and the culture and the vision and the goals now. You see that? That's powerful. Okay, you haven't got a songwriter. Hunt out around and get songs that do. But if you allow potpourri, how can you build a culture when the music's inconsistent to the culture? See what I'm trying to say? So people say, you just play your songs. Well, yeah, primarily. And then we play Oxford Falls, and then maybe other CCC churches, and then no other music gets played in our church. People say, you don't like that other music. No, it's all good, but it doesn't build our culture. We are so specific on the culture, right? Otherwise, what you create is this potpourri church that's just going everywhere. So there's a lot of activity, and so it's more about what I like rather than what I need to sing to take the church into this place of faith, for instance, okay? You see what I'm trying to say? So if I'm trying to raise money and encourage building fund and building the house of God, and then we've got a song that says, we are poor and lowly. Well, then you're not going to raise a lot of money, are you? Because you've got everyone confessing poverty, you're trying to raise money. You see, that's just an example. It's no good having songs that are against unbelievers, talking about them, right? So an unchurched guy comes in the church and sits down and goes, the world's wicked and all those in it. Yeah, he's feeling bad. You see, it's that simple. And it's really thinking this through. So people say, but you know, your songs don't fit my church. Probably, correct. Totally. So if I got called to pastor in Texas, in Dallas, what music would I play? Unashamedly. Shania Twain. And I guess all my song leaders to dress like her too. Why? Because that's how Texas women dress. I wouldn't bring Australian jeans with tears in them and, you know, and jumpers and, you know, like this. I wouldn't get up in an American church like this. They wouldn't accept me. I take my suit and I say to the pastor, how do you want me to dress? And I know what it is. Sunday morning suit and tie. Sunday night you can go smart casual. And what that means is sort of semi-formal to us. But you know. So you fight that, you fight it to your peril. See? Got to know the culture, know the music that works, know what happens, and then that's how you build leadership in the church. So it's all around value and culture. And so often we're fighting against culture. So it's no good. You know? We've got to understand that there is a purpose, there is a value, there is a culture. Well, questions?
Yeah,
because we've finished that section.
You've got to selectively fight culture, though, can't you? What you're saying is you can't fight the whole culture, but you've got to select your battleground. Would that be the way you regard it?
Now, here's another point on culture. Who are we? Okay, I'm the senior minister. Who am I going to attract to me in the church? People like me. What am I like? Well, I'm educated. I'm into sport. Okay. That's who I attract. It's very interesting. I've noticed since I've got 55, I'm attracting more older people. They feel they can relate to me as the pastor. But when I'm 30, I'll have some old people there, but older people won't quite relate. That's the way it is. So what I've got to do now, the older I'm getting, is I'm promoting younger people in all the positions and bringing them through so that people can identify with them in the department, because each department in our church now is like a church. That's how you got to think. All right? And so it's understanding the culture in which we live and adapting to it, you know. And you can do this through surveys. First of all, survey your church and find out what the average age of your church is, average educational standard, average earnings, whatever. And I guarantee that matches the community that you're ministering to, the average. But you know what churches do? I find churches have this culture within their church, let's just call it X, and then there's a little wee group out here, Y, and all the money and resources go into 1% of the population. And then there's 99% of the population out here that actually match that, and they get nothing. And they spend all their time trying to reach these people, because that's the mindset of ministry. You've got to help the needy and help the people that are poor and do all that, you see. So if I follow that mindset in my community, I ought to have a storehouse. I ought to have a street ministry with coffee cart going out on Friday night feeding the street kids and the hungry. Okay? They don't exist. They do not exist in our community. We're living in a new progressive area. It's the fastest growing area in Australia. Where do you live?
North.
North. You know that new area in Hamilton North? That's my neighbourhood. Right? So if I get a coffee cart with free food and coffee to feed the hungry on a Friday night, and I go out in that area, they're not there, they're all in front of their plasma TVs, watching the footy, drinking Chardonnay, you know. I've missed the point. You see what I'm trying to say? So, you know, and I said it this morning, who are the people in your neighbourhood? Who are the people that God has sent you to? Who are they? Define them. Get the stats. Know them. Know where they live. Find out what their needs are. So what's the average need of the person in our community? I've got money, two cars, boat, probably a holiday home. I've got investment properties. Marriage is shot. Kids are off the rails. Right? So it's not rocket science. So what do? Marriage seminars, huge youth and children's ministry. Most of our money goes here. Bam. Right? Most of my money goes to the youth and children and family programs. Bam. Why? Because that's the people in our neighbourhood. Then I get people, you know, bright sparks, I'll come along. Why don't we give to missions? I said, our whole money's going to missions. Where? Yeah. To the people in our neighbourhood, where God sent us. That's where our money goes. See, and I find Christian thinking doesn't go there. So I'm going to spend, so I've got a budget of 100 grand. What sense does it make putting the 100 grand into 1% of the population? I'm not saying to ignore it. We give all the time to those needs in our city. But in the community where we are, because people will not travel more than, say, 15, 20 minutes to church. So if you get a map of your place and you're here, basically that's your ministry area. So who are they? But say there's a real need over here with 1%, we'll give to it out of your missions, yes. But don't try to reach all those people when you can't, when you're not reaching the people that God's called you to. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
It's really helped me. I didn't just believe this. I was brought up in Teen Challenge. I ran Teen Challenge New Zealand. I ran it. Street kids. I visited the prisons every year. All right? Because that's the mentality that we had. You minister to the 1% or the 0.5%. But what about the 99% that are right on your doorstep that God's called you to reach? Who are they? What do they look like? What music do they like? What dress code do they like? Now, here's something I found out. Most of my guys are dressing Monday to Friday suit and tie professional. Have a guess what they don't want to wear on a Sunday. And I turn up, praise God, in a suit and tie, hallelujah. I've lost half of them. It's like, give me a break. So I dress like this. This is how I preach on a Sunday. I might have an open neck shirt or jeans or whatever. If it's a dedication and maybe families are coming, I might put slacks on and just dress up a little bit more for the visitors or whatever, you know, and it's a special event. I understand all that. You know, if it's a funeral, a wedding, I turn up in a suit and tie or ask the family what they want. I understand all that. But you see, that's just wiring yourself to your community. Because we have a whole lot of theology that says, oh, it's just God. God will do it all. Well, he does, but he does it through you. And you win people like you. That's that homogenous group idea, right? You know, we do a lot. We actually give money every year. We give thousands away to other charities because we don't get a chance to do it in our community, right? So I think a few years ago we gave, I think it was about $5,000 to the Salvation Army for feeding families over Christmas. They nearly died. It was the biggest donation they had. They couldn't believe it, you know, because they go out and get $2 and $10 and whatever. And we just sent them and said, look, that's for, and we specified, we said, this is for your feed. You know, they put on big Christmas food for, you know. But we're not reaching those people. They're right in the inner city, you see, where their helpers, their ministry. So we give to that. Every year we put a Christmas tree. Oh, this really brings in the demons. I'll tell you what, it's awesome, mate. Religious devils. Oh! At the back of our church every year, we've bought this 9-foot Christmas tree, fully decorated. And what we do every year is we have a Christmas toy appeal, and our goal is always to fill a mini truck with it. And we get every person in the church to bring a gift, and on the gift they write, you know, boy, 10 years, girl, 8, whatever. And then we ring of organisations like the Lions Club one year, another year we give to, what are they called? You know, like the Lions. Rotary, thank you. Rotary. Then there's others. St. Vinny's de Paul is big in Australia. So they get a ring, say, early December and say, look, can you, we've got a Christmas toy up here, we're a church. Can you bring a ute around, preferably a covered one with a long deck? And they go, what for? Well, we've got our toys. We're going to give it to you. And they go, wait a minute, you're Pentecostal, aren't you? Because, you know, it's sort of, We say, yeah, well, we want to give to needy children that are in other areas of our city that we're not giving to here. We can't give to there, you see. So we do that every year, you see. So you find ways to be, what's the word, missional is the old word, so that we're always giving out, etc. Right? But you know, charity does begin at home. And I think sometimes we're trying to reach the whole world, and but the need's right under our nose. We haven't researched them. See? So the fact that 42% of the 12 to 14-year-olds in our community are in broken homes, I think that's a pretty big need. So we're putting thousands of dollars into it. We've got a whole counselling department now that's open to the unchurched community to come for counselling. And I'll tell you, her books are full. We're training up a whole team to do it, right? Because in our neighbourhood, they've got money, they're cashed up, they've got the lifestyle, but they haven't learned how to run their own world. You know, they're still divorcing and problems with the kids and all that. So we've got stories that are just awesome. And I no doubt you've got them too, but they just, to me, they just turn it on. We discovered we had an unchurched father in the deacon team. And he wasn't even saved. And you know why he came? His kids are in trouble. You know, they're middle class, white collar kids. Through the high school ministry, one of their kids got involved with our youth ministry, brought the brother along, both of them got saved. Their lives so turned around. The wife was so thrilled. She came and got saved. And he thought, oh, I better go check it out, this church thing. But he thought, man, my kids. He turned up. He just loves it. And then he starts saying, well, gee, that 10% thing's a good idea. I mean, I've got to pay for my kids. So he starts tithing. He's not even a Christian. You know, you get Christians, not in the Bible. You know, he wired it. This is how he wired it, okay? This is awesome. He goes, I'm in the rugby club. I've got to pay my subs. I go to the Lions Club. I've got a membership fee. My kids come to this church. What's the membership fee? And he heard me talk about the 10%. That must be the membership fee. And then he thought, how can I help? So he volunteered for security on a Friday night, because we have to have security on a Friday night with 400 or 500 kids running around the place. And so, you know, fathers volunteers for that. And then he got involved in the deacons. And then one of our pastors said, I think we need to get him saved, you know. So it's a great story, isn't it? But you see, what I'm saying is that's a need in our community. So that's our target market, if you like. So that's our prime calling. And we go for it. And now that's happening. I'm going to tell you story after story like that, which is just awesome. I'll ask the young guy first. He had his hand up. Kyle, is it?
It is. Thank you.
Yeah.
Actually, you answered my question.
Did you? Good man. Awesome.
Yeah, great to hear those stories about your missional activities. You will have a percentage in your church that are also interested in cross-cultural mission.
Yes.
Offshore.
Yeah.
How do you support that?
Two ways. We do it through our own mission work into Thailand, India, because we've got certain guys that have ministries, right, out into those areas. So instead of them just ministering, we bring it in under the leadership and say, just like the music department, we want your ministry in India to help us build our church. So what he's doing is taking younger leaders and people that need exposure to ministry and cross-cultural ministry, he takes them. But it's part of what we do. You know, I'm trying to say it's not like he just goes off and does his ministry in India. It's part of the church. And we support orphanages in Thailand and, you know, all this sort of stuff. So right now, I think it was just last week, our women's department ran a big fashion parade. I haven't seen the results on that. That, again, is to bring unchurched people in. One of their goals was to raise money for the India team going later in the year for a couple of orphanages. So all that sort of stuff, right? So it all becomes part of what we do rather than all these individual things happening. And that's part of the job of the senior leader, is to bring holistic, to bring it together, right? Rather than it's all scattered and we're all ministering, but there's no sense of building the church. So this guy, who's got such a heart for India, I mean, he's quite significant, and he pulls pastors in from all over, and he's got orphanages and things. Now, for the first time in his life, he said, I feel like I can contribute to our church by taking some of the young preachers away and really giving them an opportunity to preach outside the church and develop their skills. And they come back and they're all fired up. Just that alone to him is like, wow. Then he gets younger people helping him do the music and so forth in his crusades and, you know. So all that happens. So it's not either or in any of these things. It's and also. But the issue is leading it to be part of something that's going somewhere. And if we just stay in a ministry mindset, a lot of stuff's happening, but is it building the team, is it building the church and contributing to what you're really called to do? But then on that too, you have to make a decision on how much of that you allow in terms of that strategic thinking now. How much of that allow? Is all your key guys out all the time in India and then you're not building your church? Right? So you get into that zone. Okay? Which is really interesting. Where not to go. I reckon part of the thing is saying no to things more than yes. Kind of, you know what I mean? And finding out where you're productive as a pastor and where it's leading, etc. You know. But if we're still in a ministry mindset where we don't want to say no, and doing is more important than strategic planning and direction, then we're never going to deal with those things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Helpful? It's interesting, isn't it, churches? They're a beast to ride, I'll tell you.
Yeah, Alex from Raglan. Just want to come back to your quadrant and wondering how your numbers thing fits into a small community where, when you've got a church of 2,500, that would be the size of some smaller communities.
So say what you're saying is, if I'm a community of 2,500, what's my expectation? I reckon if you got 10% of the population, that'd be a pretty powerful church, wouldn't it? It's 250. That's right. Okay. Recently, we're trying to get land into a new area, and we've approached the developers and are looking at helping us to do a satellite kind of thing, whatever. And he asked for a business plan. So I put together a business plan, what we do, you know, blah, 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 put it together. And this is an unchurched guy talking. So, no. He comes back, he said, I think we can help you. He said, do you know this church, blah, blah, blah? And I went, no, and I honestly didn't. I didn't know who they were. He said, you know what that idiot said? And I'm going, oh, man, do I want to go here? He said, he put a proposal to have a 5,000-seat auditorium in here. He said, what are these guys on? And this is like a Christian, this is a non-Christian, I can't comment, because I want to be consolidated with the brothers. You know, I don't want to be up against, so I'm just going, oh, I don't know, really, But you know, I thought to myself, leaving that place, I thought, see, that's unrealistic, isn't it? So you know that unchurched guy's thinking? He knows there's going to be maybe 10,000 homes in this new development area, and here's a guy wanting a 5,000 auditorium. We come in not talking about an auditorium, but talking about a community centre for youth and children, marriages, families, etc. Because that's the average profile. It's just like our church. So we're going to go into this area, this brand new area, that's us times two. It's just so we know we can just take our package, everything we are, into that place and start winning those families to Christ. Right? Okay? So we've planted a church in the country. We've actually called it Christian City Church South Burnett. Now we've got a bit of a weird thing happening here because our name is Christian City Church, but we're in a country. It's like, how do you deal with that? So we're changing it to, you know, C3 South Burnett. So it's just C3, but the South Burnett's more important. The reason we called it South Burnett, okay, is we're flogging from the Anglicans because I think they had it right. Okay. Because you've got to remember, the Anglican Church kind of started as a largely rural thing. In the old days when it started, there were cities, but a lot of people lived in the rural. They had parishes. Okay, so the South Burnett is this area, and there's about three or four towns. And the capital town is called Kingaroy. Have you heard of that? Okay, so what we've told our guy, go into Kingaroy, start the church, and form a parish. So you might have 250 there, 100 there, 50 there, 25 here, and another 250 there. But it's one church, a parish. With a cathedral or whatever. It's a good idea. Absolutely. So you see, because our Pentecostal thing is I've got to have a church and be my own pastor. Oh, wow. So can you see a vision of what I'm projecting to you here? Okay. So together it's 675 members in one church, but in different locations. So we didn't say CCC Kingaroy, we're saying CCC South Burnett. So we're going for a region and pulling those little towns together, rather than having 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 small churches all on their own, doing their own thing. You have one senior minister, and you have ministers over each of them, and they cooperate, and they're one staff, all the tides coming together, and you've got a community approach. Because here's one thing, if I'm true in what I'm saying. Countries do not think in terms of one town or one city, like I'm from Hamilton. Country people think in terms of the area in which they live. And council can come along and go, we're going to form a new council and divide it, but the country people don't see the line on the map. They still see the region that is their region. So it's actually quite smart in rural centres to really know what the local region is, not even what the government or some guy that drew a line on a map that was down in Wellington, you know what I mean, and goes, oh, we're going to divide it here. And usually they follow rivers, don't they? So you've got two rivers coming through here, say, the South Burnett will be in between the river, even though council divides it into two areas. That's what we've found. So we're on the way now to be putting quite a few, we're going to plant quite a few churches in regional Australia using the Anglican parish model. Yeah. Yes?
Do regardless of numbers, like if a church stays fairly small in a small district, would it be true that you really have to move through the leadership styles to grow people into any sort of vision, or would you stay in that one leadership style? Or is it part of growing to move around and develop regardless of numbers? Does that make sense?
Well, I guess we intentionalise it. I can only speak for what we do. We intentionalise it by saying, say there is a church in a community that, in reality, it's not going to grow over 100 people. You know, there's 1,000 people in the district, and they've got a church of 100. I'd say that's a pretty impacting church. I can't say I've got 10% of our city. You know, right? So what we do is we link that church, whether it's in a city or a rural community, we link that church to an apostolic centre, as I mentioned before, where those other forms of leadership will be brought to bear for that person, and they don't have to reproduce the whole thing for 100 people. Oh, see what I'm trying to say? Now, things are different a bit in Australia. You know, if you buy property in Australia, you have to be an incorporation. You have to incorporate, you have to form a company. And that moves you out of trustee kind of language or understanding into corporate law under the ASIC. It's quite a serious move, and it costs a lot of money. But you've got to set it up. So obviously what we're saying is, if you do this sort of thing, where you have maybe a major city or town that's the centre that has all that, these guys here and churches don't have to reproduce all of that all the time. You know, and that pastor can be on a building committee with all the others rather than reproducing it all. And I think sometimes that noble idea of doing it all myself, the DIY, is actually, I think, self-defeating, because we're just putting so much money and resources into doing that. So that idea of a parish is a great idea. We're just lumped onto it, and we're looking at doing it. Let me say this, just to challenge our thinking. There is a pastor in country Victoria, I think he is, and he's in a town like that, in a regional centre, but I think his population's only like 5,000 people, 4,000 people or less. He's got 800 people in his church. So he's got a church in the centre town, or the centre, the rural district town, and then he's got all these small groups, youth groups, different ministries all occurring out in the different communities, and he's running against the whole theory that a country or regional church must be a small regional church, which is really interesting. I find that quite challenging, even for me. I think, man, what am I doing? But, you know, because we're in a city of 1.5 million, 10%, 150,000 in my church. Could I believe God for 150 in my church? 150,000, that is. No, it's, you know, it's all relative, isn't it? But I mean, it's still. Then I think, what if I did have 150,000 Christians in the church in one city? That'd be pretty good. You know, you get into that stuff of urban renewal. And yeah, well, I think the mega quadrant, that was a good point. He said you might have to add a quadrant. I actually think the 1,000 plus is like a second quadrant, a new one. Because it doesn't fit those. It incorporates all those four things. But there are dynamics that are quite different. But that's a good question. And that affects Australia even more than New Zealand, because Australia has a huge rural community, as you know, huge. You know, you've only got the seaboard where people live, the rest of it's rural. Whereas it would be fair to say that New Zealand, even though there is a significant rural population, is it 2/3 of the population live above Taupo, Hamilton and Auckland and the greater area, you know, so it's becoming more urbanised. Which is an interesting question, and we need to answer it, because we've got to reach every group, don't we, go into the world and preach the gospel to every ethne.